You're with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
Good morning and welcome to Focus. This statistic may or may not surprise you. Two-thirds of Australian adults and almost a quarter of children are overweight or obese. And are you one of them? And how hard has it been to shed the kilos? Has life been a cycle of diets, exercise regimes, food supplements, magic pills? And would you consider surgery? In 2016, 23,000 people in Australia had bariatric surgery to assist with weight loss. And last year, that figure almost doubled to 40,000. Is it for some people the only viable option? And after the surgery and the rapid weight loss, how does life change and what are the new challenges? Today on Focus, we are looking at bariatric surgery. It's what some doctors regard as the most effective intervention in healthcare we have ever had.
Focus Perth with Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth.
And you will hear today from John Cecil. Now, he will be familiar to many of you as a former ABC presenter who has had weight loss surgery. Also here is Professor Jeff Hamdorf. He's the Director of Clinical Training and Evaluation Centre and a Professor of Surgical Education at UWA. And we also welcome back Charlene Grossi, an advanced accredited practising dietitian and a regular contributor to this program. Welcome to you all. And John,
Nadia.
Hello. Nice to see you after so many years.
Thank you.
You look well.
I am.
You feel good?
I feel great.
First of all, how much have you lost?
About 60, 65 kilos, a bit more maybe, depends.
So when did you have your surgery?
I first had it in 98, so it's quite a while ago. And I say first because when I had it, the gastric band was the thing, that worked very, very well for me. But times move on, and I ended up having the band removed and a sleeve. Not because I wanted the band removed or there was a problem, but other things had happened to me, and I needed to. It was a downside of other things that had happened. So, yeah.
So, before surgery then, what was life like for you?
Now, I would have said great, but it's greater after surgery. So, the thing about putting on weight is that it creeps up hour by hour, minute by minute, and you don't wake up one day and you're fat. It just happens over time. And once it's happened, it's really hard to go the other way.
Did you start to become unwell, or was there a trigger? Had you tried other weight loss options?
Oh, look, we all try all the options. The Women's Weekly's got a lot to blame answer for in this. I'd tried all the diets and a week on grapes and a week on this and a week on that and, exercising and doing this and doing that, but nothing really worked.
And when you were told by your doctor, how about surgery, was that something that you welcomed or?
Yeah, by the time I got to that stage, I was lucky. I had an enlightened GP who is aware of this sort of problem and the use of surgery to kind of break the cycle. And so he suggested that I go and investigate it and gave me some names to interview, I suppose. And so I went around and spoke to a few surgeons and ended up where I ended up. And he was very supportive in that surgical intervention.
And it worked well for you.
And it worked really, really well, yeah.
And the weight loss was pretty rapid?
Initially. The thing about it is that before you can have the surgery, you have to do some things to shrink various bits of your body so the surgeon can get in there, which came as a bit of a surprise to me. So you actually start before the surgery. And that puts, that also, if you can get through those couple of weeks of fairly grim diet, you've kind of broken the back of it. And then when you have the surgery and you come out the other side, you feel even better. And the whole thing just gets more and more positive as you work along.
I'll bring Professor Jeff Hamdorf into this now, and I imagine you're seeing a lot more people like John Cecil.
We're very busy in our clinic. That's absolutely correct. And most surgeons who specialise in this area are as busy as they could imagine. So we see a lot of people.
What are the different types of bariatric surgery?
In Australia, there are three popular operations. The most popular is called the sleeve gastrectomy, which means removing most of the stomach. About 85% of the stomach is removed, leaving a very narrow, slender stomach, which looks more like a tube and has a capacity of about a half a cup. The next operation that's in popularity is a bypass of some sort. And then third in the ranking at the moment is the gastric banding procedure, which was really very popular some years ago, but has fallen into some disfavour lately. And I have to say, in our clinic, we're very careful about who we select for gastric banding operations.
So who can qualify then?
Broadly speaking, to qualify for bariatric surgery, which means weight loss surgery, we need a history of being overweight, and there are certain cut-off points. A BMI, which most people understand these days as an index of weight, BMI of above 40 qualifies one for surgery, or 35 with a significant medical problem associated with it. For type 2 diabetics, we drop down to about 33 or so. There's good data to support these cut-off points. But specifically to the gastric band, which we love looking after patients with gastric bands because it's such a low-risk procedure, we tend to favour patients who are well-educated and intelligent, who are highly motivated, and I have to say they have to be fairly close by the metropolitan area for us to look after them properly.
And why is that? Because that band can be removed, is that right?
It can be removed, but sometimes it needs urgent adjustment. So if someone makes a mistake or picks up an illness and develops some vomiting, we ask our patients to contact us within that day so that it might be able to be adjusted to allow the stomach to rest before we tighten it up again.
And then obviously with a gastric sleeve, that's not reversible.
That's absolutely correct. The sleeve gastrectomy is not reversible.
And so you say that has a capacity of half a cup?
It starts off with half a cup, but we all know that stomachs have the capacity to stretch. And we do see a small amount of stretch in our patients at 3 to 4 years following surgery.
Not to what it was, though?
Oh, no, right. Seldom, yeah. of major significance, but generally enough to increase capacity from half a cup up towards a cup to a cup and a half even. And that's where patients have to marshal their reserves to make sure that they don't regain a lot of the weight.
Charlene Grossi, if I'll bring you in, on average, what do people lose with bariatric
surgery? So it would depend largely on the procedure they're having, but on average, somewhere between 40 to 60% of excess body weight. So generally in bariatric surgery, we talk in terms of excess weight. So where you look at a healthy BMI and how much someone is above their healthy BMI, and then you calculate a percentage of that. So we're not aiming to get someone into a healthy BMI based on the amount that they're above their most healthy weight, but what we are aiming for is long-term results.
So it doesn't mean that somebody suddenly becomes, because initially it's quite rapid, isn't it? You notice it with somebody within a month or
yeah.
so.
And again, depending on the procedure, so the surgeries like the sleeve gastrectomy that Jeff has mentioned and the bypass surgeries, they will tend to lose it quicker, but what we need to be careful and conscious of is that we're not losing too much of their muscle mass, because the procedures, as Jeff has mentioned, you know, they're very restrictive in terms of portion control, which then limits, you know, if you're looking at up a cup and a half per day of total food intake, it's very difficult to meet your nutritional requirements if you're not with a very well-supported team that can help educate you on how to achieve that.
And so it isn't as simple as having the surgery, just eat less and get on with life. And I'm going to talk about that post-surgery journey, because it sounds like this is incredibly complicated and requires a lot of commitment.
We would suggest, Nadia, that the pre-surgery journey is almost as important as the post-surgery care. We ask our patients to meet every member of our team. And so our team includes the surgeon, a GP with a special interest in bariatric care, dietitian, and a psychologist. And then after surgery, we include all of these people again and bring in exercise physiology as well.
Okay. So there is an attitude, and I'm going to go to you in a moment, but there is an attitude that if you have surgery, that you are lazy, and that if you had eaten less and you had exercised more, you would have lost the weight. Is that fair?
It's absolutely unfair and an unsustainable comment.
Why?
Surgery.
Is it an only option for some people, surgery?
Oh, absolutely. Obesity is a multifactorial disease. It's far more than energy in, energy out. And our patients are amongst the most energetic patients I have. Their activity levels are often in excess of most Australians, I believe. And their commitment to change is extraordinary and laudable as well. Yet they have medical problems which hamper them, and they might be osteoarthritis or degenerative disease in joints. They might have respiratory problems limiting their capacity to exercise. They may have psychological issues which need correcting prior to surgery, and then after surgery we need to keep an eye on these things as well.
John, you mentioned earlier that the pre operation journey, you talked about needing to make some of your body a little smaller. I mean, what was the hardest thing about that? And again, everyone can sort of jump in at any time.
Well, I guess just before that, on the lazy thing, calling people who are overweight and doing the bariatric journey lazy is like telling depressed people to buck up. You know, it just doesn't. It's just ill-informed. And so it's not a laziness thing. It's as I get older, and I am going through this. This is about the stuff that Professor Hamdorf does is like end product stuff. It's a mechanical intervention. The problem is in my head, in the head of people who are overweight, and I don't know what it is. I don't know anybody does, but that's where the stuff up is.
And is it the case though that, and I read this summer, and please set me correctly here, but that there is an issue where people do get to a certain weight and they try to lose weight, that the body actually fights to put weight back on?
Yeah, so that's correct, Nadia. So generally what you'll find is people can lose weight, but the scenario is they will regain the weight and usually more. And it's very much what's referred to as yo-yo dieting. You lose weight, you put on more. You lose weight, you put on more.
And story of my life.
Yeah, we're not debating that you can't lose weight through dietary intervention and exercise, but what we know from the evidence and from the research is that it's limited, but also it's not sustainable. And so bariatric surgery is the thing that we have at the moment that gives long-term weight loss results. And procedures like the laparoscopic gastric band, they've been around 20 years plus that you have research data on. So we have good medium to long-term data that's demonstrating good long-term outcomes, but that is associated with a lifestyle change.
And how heavy did you get? Do you mind me asking, John?
Nearly 200 kilos.
Wow. So for someone like
John, down to about 120 something now.
And that's a maintainable weight. And is that a healthy weight for John, given where he was at?
Oh, it certainly is a lot healthier. Yeah. And people would look at John and say, he's a pretty big guy still. And that's fine. We accept that. But we look at him medically, and his predicted longevity is much, much improved on what it was before.
Well, the last time I saw Jeff, he said to me, he looked at some figures because there'd been some blood tests and things, and he said, "You're a beautiful thing," on paper. and you know, the figures, if you go by the empirical data, has improved enormously, and that's the I'm still going to be big. I'm always going to be big.
We talk about risk factors, and weight is a risk factor for type 2 diabetes. It doesn't mean everyone's going to get type 2 diabetes. It means there's an increased loading for that disease.
So does bariatric surgery potentially cure that or put it in remission?
We put diabetes into remission frequently, which means that we get patients back with normal blood sugars off medications. We're hesitant to say we can cure diabetes, of course. Patients always are diabetic. Once they're diabetic, they're always diabetic. But we get fantastic control, which, of course, means the chance of a heart attack, the chance of kidney disease is much less with great control.
We are talking this morning about bariatric surgery. In the studio, Professor Jeff Hamdorf. We also have dietitian Charlene Grossi and John Cecil, a former ABC presenter, very popular and looking fantastic, may I say.
Thank you.
He is sharing his journey of having bariatric surgery.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
So you touched on the issue of diabetes. What are the metabolic changes then that happen in your body post-surgery?
Every organ involved in our patients, every organ of the body is at risk of a change because of excessive weight. So diabetes is a great example. The other good example is hormonal abnormalities bringing about problems with pregnancy. There's an association with a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome, which causes infertility in women of fertile age. Heart disease is a particular risk because of the potential to form atherosclerosis and therefore blockage of the arteries and promote heart attack. Our patients are at risk of stroke because of that as well. Respiratory issues are more of a mechanical problem. So the more weight we carry, the harder it is to breathe, and there's crowding of the airways. So that's called, our patients often have sleep apnea or obstructive sleep apnea. You know, one of the biggest issues our patients face also is that of depression. And that we see that in perhaps 70% of our patients.
Any of that familiar to you?
Most of it.
All of it?
Pretty much, yeah. Certainly the sleep apnea. And it has improved enormously over time. That's a very slow journey, but much better because of it.
So does it actually change your genes? I have read that it can actually change your genes. How accurate is that?
This is some stuff which is starting to come out and actually pertains to epigenetics. So it's genetics in the next generation and the generation after that. So we can generally say if you're born of a big family, you'll probably end up big. So there's a genetic loading for obesity, but of course environment is important, what we feed our children, mums out there. But the other thing to know about is the data that came out of the people who were incarcerated during the Second World War and who had deliberate weight, you know, food deprivation, and the next generation had a tendency, much greater tendency to morbid obesity because of that, and that's remained in their genetic fabric since then. I have to say it's not an area of my special knowledge. Charlene, are you up on this one?
Not on the epigenetics, no, sure. Sorry.
It is coming. We know that obesity is a genetically influenced disease. Environment is terribly important. We exercise less than we used to.
Yeah, yeah.
Our portion sizes are bigger.
Yep.
Our food tends to be more processed than it used to be. And screen time is terribly important as well. All these are the environmental factors that we as parents can influence in our children now.
We touched on this. I have asked this very question of our panel and still we get these texts. Vanity and laziness comes to mind. What about this one? I could name 10 people I know who have simply had unhealthy lifestyles and had this surgery rather than get healthy. I understand some people need this, but many are simply lazy. Perhaps deal with the self-worth issues instead. That is a very hard attitude to eradicate from people. Please, any of you respond to that. And we've touched on this already.
You're really informed. Until you've been on the journey, don't comment on it. It's like telling a person who's depressed to just get over it, suck it up. It's wrong. It's just not right. And it's not lazy. And it's not lazy because you have to work bloody hard to be able to afford the surgery. You know, frankly, it's not cheap.
And
they're not, and it's going to be harder to get health insurance to cover the new system.
All that, but you've got to work to get it. You've got to really want it. You've got to prove to a fairly bright panel of people that you do want it and that you deserve it. Not lazy. If you're going to criticise anybody, criticise the people who advertise and promote unhealthy foods and systems that don't allow people to be healthy.
And the way I would look at that is that it's a forever journey. You don't just have surgery and lose weight. It's for forever. It's a really large commitment for somebody to take on weight loss surgery. And as Jeff said, they're highly motivated. The team that we work in, it's a multidisciplinary team. So they're not just seeing a surgeon having surgery and being sent out the door. There's the psychology support, the dietitian support, the sports physiologists, the GPs that specialise, the physicians in this area. And we know the longer you have it, and John can probably sort of comment on this, is it gets harder almost,
yeah,
isn't it?
It does. Yeah. The time after the surgery, it's sort of there's a
the honeymoon period.
Honeymoon period, yeah. So I was going to say post-surgery glow.
So that's the first couple of months where you go, whoa, where's it all going?
and you know, it's a big and dramatic event. You've got professional people fussing around you. Everybody's paying you attention.
You feel good?
You feel good. You've been worried about going into surgery. You've come out the other side. It's all looking good. And you're in this sort of, you know, buzz about the whole thing. 10 years down the track, you've got to keep the buzz going. And that's you know, I'm lucky because I've got and can afford a team of people around me who keep me going. But you've got to keep that within yourself. You've got to keep the buzz going.
Let's go to Ted, who lives in Bullsbrook. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, team. Morning. I'd like to tell you my experience with bariatric surgery. About 3 or 4 years ago, I had the surgery done. I've lost about 25 kilos. Everybody talks about the benefits of bariatric surgery, but there is a hidden disadvantage of bariatric surgery.
What's that, Ted?
It's the expense of having all your trousers taken in and having to buy a new shirt.
But that's a good expense, Ted.
Yes. I've also become king of the takeaways, a doggy bag. So when I go out for dinner these days, I take my own little plastic container because I can't eat the whole meal.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? You double up on your half the cost of the meal because you can have it for lunch the next day.
So, Ted, I'm suspecting that I understand you had your surgery 3 years ago and it's clearly been a success.
Absolutely, it's fantastic. Takes about 10 years off your life, I reckon.
Fantastic.
I'll give it an extra 10 years.
Good on you, Ted. Appreciate that. I mean, that's a good news story. And 3 years into it, all going well. What is the biggest challenge when the glow, you know, that initial glow period is over and you have that dramatic weight loss and everyone notices and you're feeling great, because you talk about it being a lifelong commitment, what is the biggest challenge?
Being invited out for dinner and going.
Because you can only eat half a cup.
Well, no, not because of that, but you go and you have a good night and a glass of wine and making sure that you don't eat more than you're supposed to eat, and there's half a plate left and everybody's saying, tuck in, you're a big boy, tuck in, and not.
Does that mean that part of life is less enjoyable?
No. I still go out for dinner and tell them all...
To bugger off.
To bugger off. My words precisely.
Nadia Mitsopoulos on ABC Radio Perth and on the ABC Listen app.
Nice to be with you this morning in the studio talking about bariatric surgery, Professor Jeff Hamdorf, Charlene Grossi, she's a dietitian, and the lovely John Cecil, who is back on the ABC airwaves, sharing his journey, and it's been a tough one. You look great. He had surgery. Peter says, when we visit the doctor, we should have to be weighed. If there is a steady increase, a plan should be implemented. Dietitian and exercise physiologists must be easily accessible. We must be proactive, not reactive. Yes, a percentage of the population have a medical condition, but did we have this problem 50 years ago? And do we want the children of today to think that 60% chance of being overweight is okay? Peter, thank you very much for that.
This one, I've had depression, anxiety, bulimia, binge eating, but I know my triggers and I make sure I get whatever physiological help and support I need to keep me exercising and on track with food. And fabulous discussion. Thank you. This texter says, fabulous discussion. I feel motivated to keep going. I would like to take on the pre-bariatric surgery diet as a kickstart to more healthy eating. I'm on the 30-day juice challenge with Joe Cross and it's good but hard to sustain. There's a lot of that, isn't there?
There's a lot. There is a lot out there, and every patient we see has exhausted all of the conventional group methods and proprietary methods as well before we see them. We need to know what their journeys have been before we take them on, so that helps inform their progress individually.
We were talking before the news about the honeymoon period that you so glowingly, John Cecil, talked about.
It's really a really interesting time of life, because during the first year after bariatric surgery, we see patients losing 25 to 40 kilograms, which is an extraordinary amount of weight to lose and causes an extraordinary upheaval in every area of their lives. Metabolically, it's very challenging for the body to accept that. And as the weight is mobilised, it can exceed the capacity to excrete various things. So what we do see, some patients develop gallstones. And that's straightforward for us to fix. The stuff that we can't fix or try very hard to influence is changes in perception. So as a person loses weight, the world deals with them in a different way. And they become the focus of attention. Wow, look at all the weight you've lost. Congratulations. And many of our patients actually don't want that attention.
But it's hard not to give it.
Absolutely.
Because they look fantastic, sure. And you want to share that with them.
And this is where we believe our team focus comes in, because we have appointments with the psychologist following surgery to help patients deal with this, to work out what sort of tools I need to deal with the extra attention I'm going to get. At the same time, the work that Charlene does kicks in really importantly after a couple of months, because if you're only eating a quarter to a half a cup, it's hard to get the nutrition that you need in terms of both macronutrients, that's protein and carbohydrate and the like, and micronutrients. So it's difficult to absorb iron, it's difficult to absorb vitamin B12, it's difficult to absorb vitamin D. And these are the things that we keep an eye on. So it's dreadfully important for our patients to be informed and be part of the process.
So how do you manage that then? Is it food but also supplements?
Yeah, so for the banding, gastric banding, they're usually up to about a cup of food three times a day, and you can generally manage that through diet, and we would supplement based on what their bloods are doing. So at a minimum, for the first 2 years, we would check bloods post-bariatric surgery every 6 months, more frequently if there was a deficiency that we're monitoring, and then annually for the rest of their life, we would recommend. For the sleeve gastrectomy and the bypass surgery, being more restrictive or having malabsorption with the bypass surgery, it's lifelong supplementation. And we are very diligent in trying to get the message across to the clients that come to us around the importance of monitoring, because particularly a vitamin like vitamin B12, if you end up with a deficiency, that can cause issues like permanent neurological damage that's irreversible. So it is highly important that anyone considering bariatric surgery has a very good medical team around them as a minimum, so that there is that ongoing monitoring, and deficiencies will usually present in the longer term. People often think it's in that first sort of 6 months, and oh, look, they're great, they're going really surprised, but it's long term because we have stores.
Was that your experience?
We were talking about restaurants earlier. One of the things that Charlene has said to me is, if you have a choice on the plate at the restaurant or at home, eat the meat first and then fill up on whatever else afterwards. Mm-hmm.
And you feel full?
Yeah, absolutely. But you go to the restaurant and this sounds like I go to the restaurant every night, I don't. But you go and have a meal and the people who know your journey say, well, what are you eating? You should eat the veggies. Eat your veggies. That's what you need to eat. And you say, no, my dietitian says,
I need to eat this too.
I need to eat this first and then I can eat that.
Yeah, so particularly in the early days, there is a key focus on protein. So whether that's meat, chicken, fish, eggs, legumes, etc. And that's in the very early days post-surgery, we know we're very limited in achieving the macronutrients, as Jeff mentioned, so protein being one of those. And as I mentioned earlier, we're really trying to reduce the loss of muscle mass. The body doesn't store protein. So if we're not meeting daily minimum requirements, there is an increased risk of losing muscle, which is their metabolic mass. We want to be trying to maintain that in the longer term. But once, you know, in the first few months, it's very much protein focused because that's we're prioritising, but it is very much longer term about a balanced diet. And if you look at the research now, concerningly long term, if we look at a nutrient, say like fibre, at 5 years post-surgery, the average patient post-sleeve gastrectomy is maintaining about 11 grams of fibre a day compared to the recommendations of 25 to 30 grams. We know the significance of fibre in diseases such as colorectal cancer. Yeah. So again, highly important that it's very much about the quality over the quantity.
And this is where people must get a little shocked or surprised at just how intricate that post-surgery journey is and how complicated it is, and it is lifelong. I want to go to Mandy. Mandy, good morning.
Good morning.
Mandy, you've had bariatric surgery. How long ago?
I had the sleeve in February this year and I have had a great result from it.
Can I ask how much you've lost?
Sure. I have lost more than 25 kilos in less than 5 months.
Mandy, why did you decide to do this?
Sure. So I'm in my early 30s and I've always battled with my weight, and I have PCOS, that's polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I noticed that a lot of my girlfriends around my age at the time were having trouble getting pregnant, and I wanted to avoid that. So I actually went to see a fertility doctor late last year. And she was brutally honest with me. She said, I was overweight. My body was not a temple. And even if I was to take eggs now, they wouldn't be in the best shape. So that really motivated me. I knew I wanted kids. And she said, in 1 year, I'll see you and I want you to have dropped at least 20 kilos.
And at that point, Mandy, did you realise that, or was it in your mind that, well, surgery now is, because you said you've had a life of dieting, that surgery was your only option left?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I was scared after, I've been dieting since I was 12. I'm battling with genetics and, you know, like you were discussing before about people having a set body weight. When I read about that, I thought, this is what I've been dealing with my whole life. As soon as you lose weight, your body fights to put it back on. And it made sense to me. The fertility doctor recommended it. And I started realising a lot of people had it. And so I made the decision to change my life. And since then, I will say I used to take 6 tablets a day for type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, high blood pressure. I had sleep apnea, and now my type 2 diabetes looks like it's in remission. Professor Handel said, you'll always have it, but I don't take any pills for that. My blood sugars are great. I don't have high cholesterol. I don't have high blood pressure, and I don't snore anymore. And I'm just taking vitamins every day. And it's definitely not the lazy way out, which is what I want to stress to people. Yeah. I am walking 8 kilometres a day with my partner. I run up hills and I've just started going up and down Jacob's Ladder, and that's something that I would never have done, you know, before this surgery.
A whole lifestyle change.
It really is, yeah.
Mandy, definitely. Good on you. Good on you. And best of luck, because you're in the honeymoon period. Will things get a little more difficult for Mandy?
Mandy's course and weight loss will probably plateau in about April, May, June of next year.
Yeah, but she's already lost 25 kilos, yeah.
I'll say I'm plateauing, so it is an emotional journey as well. I've plateaued a couple of times, but it just motivates me to keep going. And I'm probably the opposite of the patient that Professor Handel was talking about. I love when people notice the weight loss, because I can't see it. My brain has taken a little while
good
to catch
on
up.
You, yeah. Oh, Mandy, good for you. Look, Professor Hamdorf would like to continue responding. Mandy, thank you so much. It's so good of you to share your story. Best of luck to you, Professor.
Thank you.
What a wonderful experience to share.
Good
I think
her.
That's fantastic. And thank
good
you, Mandy. I'd like to bring us back to something that Peter mentioned by text earlier on. And this is a take-home message that obesity is an illness. It is not a lifestyle choice. Despite what a former Prime Minister said, it's not a lifestyle choice, it's an illness. And the cornerstone of treatment of obesity is our family GP. So as every patient walks through the door, the GP has to know their weight.
Like that texter suggested.
As Peter suggested.
Yeah.
Every time I go to see my GP, and yes, I have a GP, he weighs me. And he says, Jeff, what are you going to do about this? I say, well, we'll talk about it later. So it's not offensive to weigh someone. And it shouldn't be offensive to discuss the medical problems associated with obesity as an illness. It is not, and the stigmatisation is wrong, and ill-informed.
Let's go to Ali. Good morning, Ali.
Good morning, Nadia.
How are you going, Ali?
I am very well. I'm smiling at Mandy's responses because I have a very similar situation.
So you've had surgery how long ago?
6 months ago.
All good?
All good. I had my checkups with my physician and dietitian on Monday.
How much have you lost?
About 36 kilos.
Wow. And life, how has it changed for you, Ali?
I have so much more energy. Where I have an old knee injury and bad feet, I'm not feeling the level of pain that I was or anywhere near it. I'm exercising a lot and I just feel great.
Yeah, Ali, thank you so much. I'm loving these stories, Charlene.
That's really great, Ali. And just, I think she's made a really important point there. We often focus on weight as the outcome, but it's so much more than that. It's the health improvements, the loss of pain in joints, the ability to exercise, the ability to feel comfortable travelling, the reduction in medications. And I really think moving forward as a society, we really need to put weight as a number in context. It's one variable that we measure, but it's the bigger picture and the outcome of health that's most valuable because somebody...
There's preventative benefits here because the obesity costs our economy something like $8 billion a year. That's enormous.
But I think it's context. So somebody can be overweight above a healthy weight, but they can be healthy.
Okay.
You can have someone in a healthy weight range who's considered unhealthy through their medical history.
Yeah.
So it is context. What we're looking at with bariatric surgery is more the obese category
sure.
with the BMI and grossly obese. So it's very much about context, but I think it's longer term thinking about weight management as a bigger picture and the broader terms of the outcomes that we achieve.
I'm going to squeeze in a couple more very quick calls. Veronica, hello.
Hi, good morning. Yes, it's very interesting, the program. My grandson's going to have an operation in October. He's going to have his stomach cut. Mm-hmm. And what he's mainly worrying about is, because nobody's mentioned it, is when your skin, the skin starts to hang, you know, when you've got all the extra skin.
Let's get an answer for you.
Okay, so about 40% of our patients, once they've lost their weight, talk to us about corrective surgery for overhanging skin, so stretched skin. And it is unsightly, and in some situations it's medically undesirable because of inflammation around the skin folds. This is where we call on our friends who are plastic and reconstructive surgeons to help correct that with body recontouring and body remodelling surgery. And we consider a wonderfully successful thing. We consider it after 2 years plus, once there's stability.
Okay. So that means that's as much excess as you'll get, basically, because your body's still changing before that.
Well, there's some skin stretches and comes back nicely. That's a genetic determinant. Some skin doesn't stretch back or doesn't come back into place, and that may need consideration of corrective surgery.
Okay. Hey, good on you, and best of luck, Veronica, to your grandson. It's a big thing to do. Paul. Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, good morning. I've listened to the stories of a couple of successes of bariatric surgery. I had it done as well, not by the doctors that are talking today, but another great surgeon in Perth. I had it done about a year and just a bit over a year ago, and it was for other health reasons. My back was failing me, and I might have been in a wheelchair in 5 years, and it's just really turned everything around completely. And I actually think it's, for me, it was quite physiological. I'm just not hungry as much anymore. So I eat sensibly now rather than half an hour after a meal, thinking, gosh, what can I have now? Mine's a lifetime of being trained, I'm afraid, to eat too much. But it was only when I had the sleeve gastrectomy that I really understood that it was more than just me not sticking to a diet. And I think people like HBF and other health providers and the federal system are pretty short-sighted, because some of the other medical conditions that would have been a problem won't be now. So, yeah.
Thank you, Paul. And that's an interesting point, because under changes to private health insurance, gastric band surgery is now going to be gold class, so it's going to be a top tier one. Medicare, my understanding is you don't get a lot back. What are we talking about cost-wise? Because you mentioned, John Cecil, earlier that it's expensive. My understanding is $8,000 to $10,000, but then obviously you've got all that. Correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, it varies, I'm sure.
It varies from centre to centre. The cost in the public sector of an operation is around $10,000 to $11,000. In the public sector, and that, of course, is borne by the system. In the private sector, the costs go up to around $16,000, and so that's largely covered by private health insurance. But, of course, Medicare pays for 75% of the cost in a private hospital, which is a curious... well, that's part of our system. The out-of-pocket costs that patients experience tend to be in the region, and this is really variable from one clinic to the next, upwards of $5,000 out-of-pocket expenses, and it tends to be around the cost of team care rather than as a gap for surgery itself. Most or many surgeons, of course, enter into no-gap arrangements with health funds, so it's not the surgeon gap we're talking about, it's the administration of the various team components, and this is where we feel there should be an item number for team care.
Right. And is that a barrier for some people, though, that cost? Could it be?
Oh, absolutely. And we know that in Australia at the moment, perhaps 50% of patients across Australia are accessing superannuation to help pay for their costs.
Yeah, we actually had a couple of texts about that. And that's not what it should be, because it is this. That's what people are saying. What is the out-of-pocket cost of the bariatric surgery? And it's several thousand because of that ongoing care, which is so vitally important. Thank you so much, the three of you, for coming in.